You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in, whether this is your first time listening to Locked On Seahawks or you're a regular listener. Glad to have you joining us. We've got a jam-packed episode coming your way, including a sit-down with running back Alex Collins and a close look at receivers set to hit the market in free agency. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The NFL revealed first-year option salary values for the 2018 draft class on Wednesday. Obviously, Rob, this is just for first-round picks. They kept this with the new CBA so that teams had the ability to add a fifth year for first-round selections. But there were a few changes that were made as part of the new CBA. Now the salary is fully guaranteed when a team opts into that fifth-year option. And so the player is going to get that money no matter what happens. And the base salary for the current season also becomes fully guaranteed. So a bit more of a protective mechanism for players. And this creates an interesting dynamic for the Seattle Seahawks because John Schneider has never used a fifth-year option. And part of the reason he hasn't is, well, the Seahawks haven't made very many first-round picks. They've traded a number of them for players. They've traded out of the first round a number of times. The only two players that they have had that have been eligible for a fifth-year option were Bruce Irvin and Jermaine Ifedi. And while both of them started a lot of games, Seattle opted not to pick up the fifth year on their option. Rashad Penny presents a very interesting case here, though. On one hand, he has been injured a lot. He's not been overly productive in a lot of the games he's played. But on the other hand, Rob, $4.5 million is the lowest value that a team has to pay any position for the fifth-year option, aside from kickers and punters. So it's far more affordable than other positions. I think this actually might be a pretty tough decision for John Schneider in the front office to make before May 3rd.
Yeah, I agree with you, Corbin. I think that at first blush, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, you don't extend Rashad Penny. You don't guarantee that fifth year. He just has not been productive enough to warrant it. But, you know, as you just mentioned, the fact that it's, you know, basically $4.5 million for that contract, I mean, that's a relative bargain for a starting running back. And so this kind of comes down to Seattle's faith and whether or not they think that Rashad Penny is about to pop this year. If they anticipate that he is going to be their number one running back, and of course that is a possibility with Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, both pending free agents. We know that Seattle brought back Alex Collins, but and I was very intrigued, very encouraged by what we saw from Alex Collins. At the same time, clearly, as a former first-round pick, Rashad Penny is going to get every opportunity they possibly can. If Seattle is confident that Penny winds up really shining this upcoming season, then it makes a lot of sense for them to give him that fifth year on that contract, because otherwise, if he does have a big year, then you know that he's going to cost twice as much, basically. And so that's the thing, is that it's what kind of confidence do the Seahawks have in Penny's surgically repaired ACL, and is he going to really be able to have the explosive season that it looked like he could after looking so good San Diego State in an offense that is very similar to what Seattle has tried to use in the past, how he's going to fit in Shane Waldron's offense, all of these things that make what would appear, I think at least to some, would appear to be a very simple decision. I think this is a much more complicated issue than it looks, like I said, at first blush.
And I think it's worth noting again, we saw what Rashad Penny was starting to do before he got hurt 2 years ago. He had a couple huge games and wins over the Eagles and the Vikings. And those are two teams, at least at the time, that had really solid front sevens. And yet he was torching them out of the backfield. He made some plays as a receiver too. You started to see the first round talent. And then unfortunately, he gets hurt again with the torn ACL, misses the rest of the season, only played 3 games last year. He's missed 21 games in his first 3 seasons. And this is a player, one of the reasons the Seahawks were so high on him is he was extremely durable at San Diego State. And so, again, sometimes that's really difficult to predict when you're looking at a sport like football, that's such a physical sport, guys get hurt all the time. it's always a gamble, regardless of past injury history. But he has shown those flashes. And so everything that I've been told this past few months suggests to me that the Seahawks still believe Rashad Penny can be a number one running back. And my belief is, if you still feel that way, then you absolutely consider picking up this fifth-year option, because $4.5 million, if he was given that contract right now for the 2021 season, he would be the 16th highest paid running back in annual value. If Rashad Penny becomes a solid starter, as Seattle still thinks he can be, that is a bargain at 16th highest paid running back in the NFL. That absolutely is a bargain. The problem, as you hinted at, is we haven't seen anything consistently that would suggest to us that he can stay healthy long enough to really achieve being a 1,000-yard rusher and being a starter-caliber running back. And so the Seahawks would certainly be rolling the dice. I think it is one of those weird cases where you're gambling a little bit either way, because as you mentioned, if he does go out and produce big numbers, he's still a very young running back. He could hit the market after the 2021 season and draw quite a bit of interest, and you'll have a hard time getting him back at the same price. If he goes out and he falls flat or he's hurt a bunch again and you picked up the option, you're on the hook for that $4.5 million. So that would be the worst case scenario here. But I definitely think that this is going to be a much tougher decision than what it was with Bruce Irvin or Jermaine Ifedi. For one reason, they both play positions that get paid a lot more money on the fifth-year option, being edge rushers and a tackle, than, say, a running back like Rashad Penny. And those guys, they started a lot of games, but neither one of them was a Pro Bowler. Neither one of them was an elite talent at their position. And so the Seahawks couldn't justify paying them the money that would have come on that fifth-year option. I do think that this is going to be something the Seahawks are going to have to sit down over the next month or so before that deadline creeps up. And they need to figure out what the game plan is. If they truly believe in Penny, then I would maybe be leaning towards go ahead and pick that up, especially if Chris Carson's not coming back. That'll be very telling. If they don't make a run at getting Carson back, he's not re-signed, they don't bring back Hyde, then that tells you right then and there that the Seattle Seahawks believe Rashad Penny's going to be the starting running back next season. He's going to get the shot to win that job. Alex Collins is ready to compete against him. But that would right there tell me, go ahead and pick this up, because now you could have an affordable rate for your starting running back for the next two seasons.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing, is that you're still talking about a running back who's 25 years old. I mean, he is still just a relative baby when it comes to the NFL game. And so while he certainly has not been as successful as you'd like up to this point, it still would give you those 2 years where he could wind up having that kind of breakthrough performance that, again, his talent suggests that could happen at any point. I mean, this is a back that at 5'11", 220 pounds, running in the 4.4s, that's just a very rare thing. And so if you are able to lock him down for $4.5 million, and again, he is the player that you thought that he was, then I think it would be a relative bargain at that point. And I love that you mentioned Bruce Irvin and Jermaine Ifedi and the fact that, again, because of their positions, then that fifth year option would have been so much more expensive. I think that when Seattle decided not to extend Bruce Irvin, I was a little surprised by that. I thought that Irvin was a dynamic athlete. I thought that he brought a degree of toughness to the squad that when he left, I thought was missing. And frankly, I wasn't surprised at all when Seattle brought him back. But at the same time, again, just the cost would have been prohibitive of an edge rusher. It's one of the arguments that some in the league use to justify selecting a running back in the first round. And there's been so many people out there, of course, who have argued that that's not going to happen, that there aren't going to be running backs being selected in the first round. It's just every now and then there is an elite talent. You have to take one. I think that there happens to be one this year as well, Najee Harris. And I mentioned that in this year's draft class again, because Seattle's deadline here is May 3rd. That is obviously after the NFL draft. So Seattle does have some time. It's not that I necessarily think that they're going to use one of their very few draft picks this year on a high ranking running back, but it does create a little bit of option, a little bit of wiggle room. So they have some time to make this decision.
Yeah, they'll be able to weigh their options. There's no question about it. To me, the big deal is going to be the offensive scheme. And if it's more of an outside zone-based scheme like we've seen Sean McVay run, if that's what Waldron's going to be calling, and they're running more under center formations to go with it. That fits Rashad Penny's game. And so I've made that argument a couple times since they made the hire of Waldron that he may be one of the biggest beneficiaries of this scheme change going into 2021. He just has to stay healthy. We really will have an idea what the Seahawks think with how they handle their free agents at the running back position and what they ultimately choose to do with Penny before May 3rd. When we return for the second quarter, shifting our gears to free agency, this is a loaded receiver class. Yes, Seattle has two star receivers in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but they could absolutely use an upgrade behind them at the number three receiver spot. And there should be some good bargains in this year's free agent class to consider for that. We'll be looking at a number of those candidates here when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Gluten-free and preservative-free as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski. It's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. The Seahawks last year had 2,000-yard receivers in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, one of the best 1-2 punches in the NFL, especially the first half of the season when the offense was flying high, putting up historic numbers. Both those players are going to be back in 2021. They're under contract, but we saw the drop-off in the second half from the Seahawks offense, and some of that had to do with the inability of a number three receiver to truly emerge in those final 2 months. You and I have talked about it frequently, Rob. I believe adding an upgrade at the number three receiver position is a bigger need than a lot of people out there are letting on. I do think this is something they got to figure out, whether it's getting a receiver fairly early in the draft or going out and taking advantage of what to me looks like an extraordinary free agent class at the receiver position. One way or the other, they need to go out and add another big-time weapon for Russell Wilson on the outside.
I could not agree more. You know, that's the thing is I know everybody wants to focus in on the offensive line. I think that the talent that Seattle already has on their roster, now granted, a lot of it is unproven. A lot of it is struggled with durability. But to me, Seattle's offensive line has more pieces in place than I would argue that Seattle's third, fourth, fifth, sixth receivers do. I think there's a lot of talent there as well, but they have had their opportunities. We just have not yet seen anybody be able to kind of jump up and seize that role as being kind of the complementary threat to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who, you know, I've talked till I'm blue in the face about the idea that DK Metcalf and his struggles with durability at Ole Miss and Tyler Lockett and just his frame and his advancing age, that Seattle has been very fortunate with the durability that both of those receivers have shown. Just imagine how much Seattle's offense goes into the tank if either one of those wide receivers actually has to miss several games. And Tyler Lockett is just a remarkably tough individual. But at the same time, you talked about how Seattle's offense kind of swooned in the second half last year. I would argue a big part of that was that Tyler Lockett wasn't nearly as effective, or at least Russell Wilson wasn't as effective in getting the ball to Tyler Lockett. Maybe I should phrase it that way. But clearly, for whatever reason, Seattle's offense really struggled. And I would argue that a huge, huge part of that is that they just need to find a third wide receiver to be able to take some of the pressure off, to diversify their offense a little bit. We saw flashes from guys like David Moore, from Freddie Swain, but nobody who really, I think, puts fear into the hearts of defenders. And so, again, I think that when you look at this wide receiver class in terms of free agency and you look at it in the draft, I really think this is a class, again, either side, that Seattle has to take advantage of, because there's so darn many good receivers out there that there are going to be some bargains. So even a team that is up against the cap a little bit, the way the Seahawks are, should be able to find a pass catcher that might get Russell Wilson that much more excited about remaining in Seattle.
We start going through this list, and it's going to become clear to our listeners why you and I anticipate there are going to be some really good players available on one-year deals that aren't going to be getting very much money, because there's no way every player here is going to get big bucks. Teams just don't have the money, and they're not going to be trying to push a bunch of stuff on a credit card for future seasons on free agent receivers. It's just not going to happen. Looking at the big names category, I don't know that any of these players are going to be targets for the Seahawks, just because to me, if they are going to go after receiver, they're going to be looking for bargains, and they're going to be trying to avoid going after aging receivers too. And so that's going to cross off a number of these players. Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller, Corey Davis, all younger receivers. Kenny Galladay is a young receiver. Those four players, Seattle's probably going to be priced out immediately. I think those are the type of players, because they're young and they've been productive for several seasons, those are the kind of players that are going to cash in. They're going to make money even this year with the lowered salary cap. T.Y. Hilton is probably the one name on here. I've talked about him a bunch in previous shows, but he's going to be 32 years old. He had his second straight season under 800 receiving yards last year. He was impacted by the fact that Phillip Rivers had an advancing noodle arm. He just could not get the ball downfield. T.Y. Hilton can still run past people. So Hilton's maybe the one guy on this big names list that maybe there's a chance the Seahawks go after. Of course, Antonio Brown, if Russell Wilson's still around, I'm sure he'll still be clamoring for Antonio Brown like he did last season. A.J. Green and DeSean Jackson, those are two older receivers that are broken down, that have been injured a lot, haven't been productive the last couple years. I would just stay away from players like that. To me, unless you just decide we're going to spend a bunch of money at the receiver position, to me, the one guy in that group that would make sense would be T.Y. Hilton. But even when you move past that, there are a number of other quality veterans that I think are going to be available for a cheaper rate that would be in the Seahawks budget.
Yeah, I like a lot of those big names. You know, I just don't think that, as you just said, Corbin, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller, Corey Davis, Kenny Galladay, I just think that those are pipe dreams probably at this point, unless Seattle really does some, you know, significant financial finagling. You know, and then you mentioned some of those other the big name veterans, the T.Y. Hilton, who a big fan of T.Y. Hilton and his game, going all the way back to his collegiate career, FIU, and Antonio Brown, we've talked about a lot. A.J. Green, DeSean Jackson, both of those two athletes really you know, intrigue me. Seattle would have to get a clean bill of health on A.J. Green. I don't know that he's going to be able to provide that. But at the same time, obviously, he has basically just wallowed in Cincinnati all of his career, never had a real opportunity to have any kind of consistency at the quarterback position, any type of true winning, you know, time in Cincinnati. So he might be somebody that might be intrigued by the option. DeSean Jackson being kind of a West Coast guy, you know, there's a possibility that he might come back and he still can fly even at his advanced age. But I love that you mentioned some of these quality veterans, because there are so many good ones out there that are just a little bit less, you know, of a price point than some of those big names. So I think you can start off with the former Seahawk and Golden Tate, but it's not just Golden Tate. There's Emmanuel Sanders. There's John Brown, just got released by Buffalo, and he is the straight line speed threat that Seahawks were hoping Philip Dorsett could also be. Nelson Aguilar had a heck of a year this past season for the Raiders, and so I think that he is an interesting one as well. I've talked specifically about Curtis Samuel and what a fit I think that he could be in Seattle's offense, and to me, he'd be one of those guys I think that you could justify a little bit extra money, just because I think that would be able to give you some snaps at the running back position. He'd be able to do some things as far as the sweep, jet sweeps and things like that Shane Waldron was a part of with the Rams. They used to do that a lot with Brandon Cooks, a lot with Robert Woods. To me, Curtis Samuel is that type of athlete, and there's several others out there, including some intriguing sleeper candidates that I like as well.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Curtis Samuel, because to me, he is another one of them that belongs in the pipe dream category. 200 rushing yards last year, over 800 receiving yards. He is one of the best hybrid weapons out there, and he has had subpar quarterback play for most of his career in Carolina. You put him in an offense like the one Shane Waldron, I believe, is going to run in Seattle. You mentioned all the different things he can do. That type of a gadget receiver would be incredibly invaluable in that style of offensive scheme. I just think he's going to be another player that was probably a bit too expensive, because he's also 24 going on 25. This is still a very young player that is emerging. He has not hit his ceiling yet. I think a team will cash in, will spend some big bucks on him. There are a few other guys worth noting. Marvin Jones has had some really good seasons in Cincinnati and Detroit. Sammy Watkins, former first-round pick out of Clemson, that is not an elite player, but he's been able to put up some decent numbers with the Kansas City Chiefs. Rashad Perriman's rebounded after being injured a lot early in his career. He's not a bad veteran option. And Adam Humphries got released by the Titans, a guy that can play out of the slot that's a crafty receiver that might make some sense. And then you look at the sleepers. There are a few sleepers on here that I think Seahawks fans would be very excited about. I talked about Isaiah McKenzie the other day, a player that I think with his yards after catch and special teams ability, you could get him on a one-year deal relatively cheap, and I think he'd be a nice addition to your receiving core as well as special teams. John Ross, we know how much he can fly dating back to his time at Washington. Things didn't work out at Cincinnati, but still a big-time talent that might be worth rolling the dice on. And a player that I really like that spent the past few years with the Baltimore Ravens, Willie Snead, is not an elite receiver, but Willie Snead is tough. He can run routes out of the slot. He can make contested catches. He might be another player that ends up signing a near veteran minimum deal just because of how saturated the market is for receivers. I think you could say that about players like Kendrick Bourne from the 49ers too. There are some really solid receivers here that just quite frankly, in this year's free agent class, they're not going to stand out. It's going to be difficult for them to get much money in a new contract.
No, I agree. I think that that's, you know, we just think back at how John Schneider has operated in free agency in the past. I mean, while everybody else is kind of focusing on some of the big name players, they would go out and they would kind of sign one of the, you know, one of those bargain basement kind of guys and try to do like a reclamation project. And so I think that some of these sleeper candidates are what Schneider and the Seahawks might be looking at. And I like that you mentioned Willie Snead. You know, just anytime you have a wide receiver who has his grit, has his speed, and then also is coming from an offense that is predicated on the running game. I think we all know that with about the Baltimore Ravens. And so he's not going to be one of those prima donna wide receivers who is going to be screaming for the ball. He has the ability to make plays as a receiver, but also is very much willing to block, as is Kendrick Bourne. I love that you mentioned him from San Francisco as well. I think any time that you can steal from a divisional rival is always a good idea. I think Kendrick Bourne has proven himself to be a very reliable number three receiver for the 49ers over the last several years. Former Eastern Washington kid that, again, kind of like you talked about with John Ross. I think anytime you have that regional familiarity, you might be able to get some of that hometown discount. And so I think that is a possibility there as well. And then DeMarcus Robinson, DeeDee Westbrook are a couple other receivers that really have flashed when they've had their opportunities. Westbrook has struggled with durability a little bit in Jacksonville, but Robinson is an interesting one. And there's only so many mouths that you can feed in Kansas City's explosive offense. But when DeMarcus Robinson has had his opportunities, he really has flashed. And so to me, he would be one of those kind of bargain basement types that Seattle has been known for trying to find in free agency.
And I'd be remiss not to throw out the name Josh Reynolds one more time as well, because you're talking about the familiarity, a guy that has played for Shane Waldron the last few years with the Rams. He is another player with good size at 6'3" that has ran some jet sweeps. You can move him around the formation. He's got the ability to catch balls in the middle of the field. He can do some damage downfield. Not necessarily a great vertical threat, but he's a guy that'll block for you from the slot position. And so that familiarity, the fact that he's coming off a year where he produced over 200 yards after the catch, career highs in receptions and receiving yards, that may be a player just because Shane Waldron really knows him well that would make a lot of sense for the Seahawks. And I would not anticipate that he's going to be a player that's overly expensive to sign. He may fall into that quality vets category instead of sleepers, but certainly another player to keep an eye on. But tons of talent at the receiver position, as you and I've been hinting at this whole time. There's no excuse for the Seahawks not to add another receiver. I can make the argument you sign one and you draft one, because this is another really good draft class for receivers. To upgrade your offensive line some in free agency, get a couple more weapons for Russell Wilson, and I think you can still find a way to make your franchise quarterback happy and want to stay in Seattle. When we come back in the third quarter, I had a chance to sit down with Seahawks running back Alex Collins to discuss his story working his way back to the NFL after not playing during the 2019 season, among a variety of other topics. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Wednesdays on Locked On NFL takes a dive into the future of your favorite NFL franchises. Tony Wiggins and James Rappian are joined every week by a Locked On draft expert to talk prospects in the upcoming draft and young NFL players fresh in the league. Get everything you need Wednesdays on Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get podcasts. Earlier this week, along with my colleague Hannah Hoover of the Seahawk Maven, I had a chance to chat with Seahawks running back Alex Collins, who took a long, winding road finding his way back to Seattle. He rejoined the Seahawks last October, was on the practice squad for a good portion of the 2020 season. But in the three games that he was moved up to the active roster, he splashed for the Seahawks and made an immediate impact. That led to the team re-signing him. Enjoy this interview with Alex Collins. First off, I want to congratulate you on the new contract. I know that it's been a long road getting back to this point where you were able to get this opportunity, and we'll discuss that more here in a minute. But I know it was a big deal for you being able to get that contract taken care of as quickly as you did.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was. It's definitely an exciting feeling. It's definitely comforting, but a lot of work still has to be done. But I'm glad you guys are interested in talking to me a little bit about my story and wanting to tell this story. I'm really interested in this conversation.
2019 and Okay. Maybe the end of 2018, you were having another really good season with the Baltimore Ravens, unfortunately ended up getting hurt at the end of the season. And you don't have to dive into this too much if you don't want to, but I know there was a legal incident and the Ravens quickly turned around and released you. Then you turn around and you get hurt a few months later. It just seemed like it was one thing after another. So I want to ask you, how difficult was it being forced to sit out that year, not being able to get back on the field? And what really got you through that process?
I'd start off with what got me through that process first. And I'd have to give it to, of course, my agent, Kelly, and then my team and everyone who helped, was involved, and also like the foundation and like my passion and just wanting to, you know what I mean, change the narrative. I definitely kind of just took everything and like all perspectives and just looked at it from a learning aspect going into, you know, that March and that off season and with training and everything, and then ultimately breaking my ankle, because it was definitely detrimental, because at that point in time, I was about to sign actually with another team. And then after breaking my ankle, everything just kind of fell through because I had to do the recovery process. So it was definitely one thing after another. And definitely there were times where it was hard, because my entire life, I'm talking throughout high school, I never missed a game. And like, even if like, it was for injury, I'm playing through injury throughout college, like never make excuses, never miss practices, but to be completely away from the game for such a long period of time, never had to deal with an injury before, to breaking my ankle and having to rehabilitate, not really understanding like what really goes into recovering from a major surgery. And I just, you know, really just accepted my situations every time, understanding where I was at and what needed to be done to ultimately get to where I am today. And that's pretty much what it was, just dedication to the cause and staying passionate even through the hard times and just grinding it out. Even the days that I wanted to throw in the towel, it just kind of like made the flame grow even more. Like listening to myself have any type of quitter mentality in my mind just kind of grew that passion even more. And did a few workouts with a few teams, ultimately getting picked up by Seattle and getting a few opportunities and just making the most out of them. So it was just after overcoming all of those adversities, a matter of just making the most of every opportunity after that.
Well, I see on Instagram, adversity killer is your tagline and motto, and it's a lot everywhere. So did that mindset come from the 2019 season? You mentioned that you would, you know, play through injuries in the past, but have you always had this mindset, or where did that come from?
It's crazy because I've had this mindset and I had this logo, this brand. I've had this before the incident, and then afterwards it was just kind of like, now I, even though I've been through adversities before, it was more so, this is where, like, it was kind of like I was prepared for it almost, like mentally. Like when times were hard, I constantly find myself telling myself, like, how can you preach and be an adversity killer and not kill adversities and not lead by example? So I found it definitely helped get me through and continue to motivate me today. You know, even after signing a contract, you know, there's more adversities. You know, now I have to compete for the starting job. You know, the journey's not over, and it's just a matter of knowing, like, it's knowing the possibilities and knowing that adversities, big or small, come along the way. I have like that foundation and that understanding of how I can get through it and staying motivated, and just doing it once, it makes it easier the second and third time down the road.
Pulled the curtain back here as far as what happened in 2019, how difficult it was. And then obviously not with the team in training camp either to start next year. You've got COVID-19, the pandemic going on. So there's just so much uncertainty with players. But what did it mean to you for the Seahawks, the team that drafted you and a team that ended up cutting you at one point? What did it mean to you for them to be the team that gave you that second chance, that opportunity to redeem yourself on the field?
It meant everything. And it was definitely like a homecoming type of feeling, coming in the locker room and seeing those same guys, Tyler Lockett, Bobby Wagner, Russ, and just, you know, guys that I played with back before I left, and the coaching staff, and being in the city and coming back. It was like the first time, you know, being a rookie, not really knowing, not really having a foundation, just on a team, really embracing being in the NFL pre-COVID to, you know, fast forward, going to Baltimore, really getting that identity and really getting those opportunities, and then going through everything and to get repicked up by Seattle with the mindset and the mentality that I grew and I picked up. It was definitely like an excitement, like, wow, you know, I'm locked in and I like know I'm more than capable, and now I can show you guys my true colors, whereas I can admit that I was unprepared the first time around. You know what I mean? Being more prepared and understanding, and that's why I would preach it's very important to have a routine, because ultimately that's where the success comes, just staying consistent with what you believe in and doing it 110% the best you can. And with that recipe, I failure is not an option.
Well, how would you describe the feeling when you were able to get back out there on the field against the Bills? And was there a newfound, like, maybe love or gratitude for the game of football in the 2020 season?
Most definitely. When I was out there, getting back out there with the Bills and getting that opportunity and then following with the Rams. And it was just, it's definitely a different mindset when I'm out there. It's like the details are so important. Like the film study is times 10, you know, the work, the efforts, just the strain after at the end of every carry, like the awareness with ball security, really reading defenses and really understanding safety rotations and knowing how they disguise their blitzes and knowing that, you know, which teams like to bring corner casts or off the short edges. And just, it really amplified my game going through everything and those adversities and then getting those opportunities. It really taught me to really cherish them more and just really take advantage, because as I saw before, it could be taken away or I never know when I'll get that opportunity again. So it was definitely like a claw and scratching, and you guys are going to have to really bring some efforts when it comes to tackling me kind of mindset.
Definitely noticed that on the field. When you were at Arkansas, I remember I called you a face mask breaker, guy that can really thump people. I know that you certainly earned this opportunity. You talk a lot about the preparation that went into this, getting back into the NFL. I wanted to zoom back, though, to when you got the opportunity to come back to Seattle, because you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Seahawks were one of the teams, the end of the 2019 season, that took a look maybe at bringing you back in, bringing you in for a visit. Mm-hmm. We didn't sign with anybody, but how different was it coming in during the pandemic and having to go through a visit and trying to deal with the testing protocols and all of that stuff? How crazy was that process?
It definitely was crazy, and I would like to shed light on that, because it's hard, especially being that after COVID, everything like really changed, and it was something that I wasn't a part of that when it really started, and then until now. So fast forward, the protocols, the COVID tests, like when I was doing workouts, and you are right, back in that 2019 season, towards the end in December, they worked me out. They brought me in. We were so close to being on the team, but it didn't work out. To fast forward to me coming back there, it was definitely that excitement, because I felt something good when I was there doing the workout. I felt the energy and the aura and just being around those guys again. And they saw the physical transformation from me being my rookie year overweight to really locking in and having a foundation coming back. So just from there, I already knew I could potentially be back. So I already had my mindset like at that possible opportunity. But coming back is definitely difficult, because you don't just jump right in. You know what I mean? You got to come to the whichever city. You got to sit out a week. You got to come COVID test every day. And if you're not used to it, it's very uncomfortable. Something that you can't get used to. And you got those guys, you know, who have the facilities, they have the trainers, they have the coaches, you know what I mean? And not having that and just jumping on that, it's a huge difference and a huge tempo change that is hard for a lot of people to adjust to, especially having to come and sit in a hotel. Can't leave, really, because you don't want to possibly pose, you know, get contracted. So it's like you're really in this hotel for a week, sitting around to jumping right on the practice field, running around and having to prove your value and your worth. So it's definitely, I'd say it's definitely tough. And the whole time you don't get a playbook, because you can't interact, you can't meet. So the studying aspect, the preparing yourself, the jumping in and knowing everything, all of that is taken out of it. But normally it would be a lot more groom and hands-on. Hey, this is such and such. This is your coach. This is where you'll be. All of that is done at such a faster rate. It was like, thankfully, that was in my rookie year, and I've been there before. So it was like, I already had my routine down. I already know where to go, who to talk to. You know what I mean? So when I look at it from a different perspective, if I was someone else, I would have definitely been shook, and I felt like it would have affected my time, like how soon I was able to get back and play with the Bills. You know what I mean? I felt like another person would have had to wait like a few more weeks to just before they could do that.
Definitely. It looks like, sounds like the adversity prepared you in every way then, but Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde are heading into free agency, and I'm not really sure if they're going to be returning or not for the 2021 season, but what are your thoughts on how the running back position group looks right now and how you guys will be carrying the load next year?
My thoughts is definitely a young, talented group with Chris and Carlos. If they don't come back or not, like, I'll be one of the older guys in the room now. I know everybody personally, from DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, Penny, you know, these all my brothers, like we call in FaceTime. I'm actually trying to get them to come down and work out here with me in Florida, you know, but those, some of those guys are in Vegas and they have their other little spots that they're used to and accustomed to. So, but it's definitely a friendly, like, you're my brother, we're going to work and grind and get through it together kind of relationship. You know, the competition is always there just from the atmosphere of the organization. You know, Pete Carroll believes in competing, and, you know, we all believe in that. You know, best man wins, so there's never any, like, aggression towards each other. It's just, I'm going to push you to work, or, you know, I'll show you my routine, or you'll see something I'm doing that you could adjust to or change to ultimately make us all better, you know? So I'll definitely look forward to competing with these guys and coming in and just showing my value and my worth and that I'm ready and still can do the same things I did last year.
I got to ask you, I know there's a lot of rumors swirling around on the internet right now about the guy that hands off to you, Russell Wilson, and you had a chance to play with him your rookie season as well as last year, hoping he's going to be the guy handing off to you this year. I guess my question is, what are your thoughts on the notion that the Seahawks would actually move him and maybe Russ wanting to play elsewhere?
I'm definitely on both sides of the fence when it comes to it. Me being that I'm there now, I would love Russ. That's future Hall of Famer right there. I've watched him since 2016 do things that a lot of people didn't believe was possible, make a lot of magic happen on that field. So personally, I don't want him to go anywhere. I feel like it'll definitely make the run game a bigger threat, having him with, you know, the read option and just the things that he constantly do year to year. And, you know, with the winning seasons and everything he's capable of. But I respect him and wanting what's, you know, best for his career, where I don't really know the aim. I haven't really, you know, it's all quiet. So, you know, if that's what his team or that's something he did decide to do moving forward, you know, I couldn't be mad at him for, you know, chasing his career and following that journey wherever it takes him. So I'm definitely on both sides of the fence when it comes to it.
Well, it's still very early in the off season, but have you had a chance to talk to Coach Waldron and at least dive into that playbook a little bit? And what are your expectations for how the offense will look compared to last year?
I'm open-minded, honestly. I didn't get a chance to really dive in, so I don't really know the aim or the goal, but, you know, just with the mentality, you know, with the mindset being an adversity killer, I'm ready for the challenge. No matter what it is, I'm ready to learn the scheme, the identity, and of what we will potentially be in the future. I feel like once the decision is decided with Russ, we'll be able to really focus on that aspect and what they want to do and be able to let us know. But, you know, ultimately, I've been in so many different schemes. I've had to learn different playbooks, and I don't think it'll be a problem at all. Like, I've dealt with so many different offensive coordinators and different minds and different brains over the years that, you know, once you learn the scheme and get everyone on the same page, from the O lineman to tight ends to quarterback to the receivers, anything is possible. Anything can work. You just have to all believe in it from the head down. And they do a good job with really explaining that to us. So I have no doubt that I'll be ready and it'll be a good scheme whenever it does get started.
Alex, we greatly appreciated having the chance to chat with you. A lot of great insight on your journey back to the NFL, getting back to Seattle. And so now you got a new contract in hand, an offensive scheme that it sounds like, regardless of what you guys do, you're excited about. Hopefully Russell Wilson handing off to you. So this is my big question. How are you going to attack this offseason? What's the biggest goal for you getting ready for 2021 so that you can be the best version of Alex Collins for this football team?
My biggest goals and everything that I have planned for this offseason is literally just stick to the basics, stick to what I've been doing, sticking to what got me there, what helped me rebound, what helped me get back, what helped me stay focused and stand in shape. You know, I got the diet, I have the trainer, I have everything all organized. I have the routine, the foundation, and it allows me to just stay consistent as possible, you know, with the diet and stand in shape. I pick up different you know, hobbies like boxing and the Irish dance or anything that can help contribute to the footwork and the conditioning aspect. I'm very open-minded when it comes to that. I picked up bike riding, like anything that can help make me more dynamic. You know, there's a lot of guys that are in this area, like running backs, Alvin Kamara's and, you know, Melvin Gordon's, the James White's. These are all good friends of mine that, you know, we work out at the same facility. So definitely competing with these guys over the offseason, it pushes me to be as best that I can be as well. So I definitely have the routine and just day by day put the work in.
We greatly appreciate your time, Alex. Congratulations again on the contract and best of luck to you this offseason. Get ready for 2021.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you soon.